afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am pleased to have as co-host today Dave Allen. And yes, we're going to bring you our opinions and commentary on today's economic and political issues. Today is July 5th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Friday, Melody.
Hey, how was your 4th?
It was explosive and independent.
Oh, yes. Very good. Very good indeed. And it's good to be back. I'm back on my routines. And today's kept seeming like it was Monday, but light trading. Did you get a chance to see what the volumes were in any of the markets today, Dave? I assume it was light trading for the day.
You know, early on it was light. I didn't see if it picked up toward the end.
Okay. Well, gold today, we had a big drop, you know, from the get-go. Gold was down $28, but it recovered nicely. We had a low of 1386, and now we're back up over 1401 in the New York spot price aftermarket. So only down 1490. So it had a great, great recovery. 1401. Let's see if it can hold that 1400 level. And again, my prediction is next week, when all this holiday hoopla is over, and I think we're going to, and the G20 is over, then I think things are going to get back. And I do think, now, are we going to still have ups and downs with gold? Of course. But I don't think, but I think we're still going to see the continuation of this run. Silver today, again, had the same kind of day, down 26 cents at 1509. Platinum was down $24 at 813, but the other white metal, palladium, was up 7 at 1578. The USDX today, and this is what's baffling. I mean, again, if you don't think these markets aren't manipulated, today the dollar was down 0.61 at 97.24. So we had a kind of a reversal on it. Now it's beginning to go back down. And, of course, that's why we saw the reversal in the gold prices also. Crude oil was up 21 cents at 57.55. Stock markets today, they were down like, what, 230-some points earlier in the day. Let's see, down 42 for the Dow, 26,923, so that had a big recovery. The NASDAQ was down 8 points at 8161. The S&P was down 5 at 2,990. 10-year yield, that popped 2.05%, up 0.09. That's a big day for the 10-year yield, wouldn't you say, Dave? And I guess he's not going to say, but
still hanging below the 3-month though, in addition to the 2-year and 5-year bills. So he's still showing that inverted curve. Mm.
But and the European Asian markets are, you know, pretty much unchanged overnight. And of course, what emotion is driving the market? We're looking at 60, so that's popping up. So the country is feeling good. Even though consumer confidence dropped, we're still feeling good. We're feeling good that our confidence dropped. All right. Makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it? But the big report today, as everyone was anticipating, was the payroll growth. It did rebound sharply in June, as the report said that the U.S. economy added 224,000 jobs. This is the best since January, and of course it runs contrary to worries that both the employment picture and the overall growth picture are beginning to weaken. The unemployment rate edged up to 3.7% as labor force participation rose. Economists surveyed by Dow Jones, of course, they expected it to rise by 165. I think mine was 168, so I guess I was right in there. With Dow Jones, I'm beginning to think like them, Dave.
Oh God! Oh, that now, ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday afternoon. You'll have to excuse Melody. She just went a little off script there.
Yeah, we know what happens when you go off script. Got to stay to the script. But let's see. May's initial report had growth of 75,000. had raised doubts about the durability of the record-setting expansion. The May count was revised lower to 72,000. Let's see if there's anything else. Any other interesting numbers coming out of that, Dave?
No, just as really as you had spoken. I mean, gold initially dropped $30. Silver fell over 40 cents initially, as platinum was down $30 at the time. Important thing, you know, keep in mind the trends. Over the past 30 days, gold's still up 6%. Silver up about 3 for the year. Gold's up $135, actually more than that now, or more than close to 11% year to date. So, you know, with this week's correction, you know, and our prices for the gold American Eagle still only $30 over spot, I'd call that a great buying opportunity, Melody. Where should interested buyers call?
Well, of course, they 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And also, I want to make this announcement, too, on the 1-ounce American Silver Eagles premiums. Now, we saw this big drop in silver prices. It wasn't that big, but it was, you know, it's drop. Premiums on the 2019 American Silver Eagles have risen. That means there's been strong buying, and we were able to offer those on the secondary market, the backdated, random dated sealed boxes, and they're just about gone. So the demand is still strong, so that means it's pumping up the premiums on the American Silver Eagles 2019s. So I was a little surprised. They popped 10 cents, and that's a lot. That's a lot. Now, I'm not saying spot rose. I'm talking premiums, wholesale premiums, not mine. Wholesale premiums rose 10 cents. That's significant in when you're looking at a $15 product. But this is what happens, ladies and gentlemen. When you're snoozing, things change quite rapidly from day to day. So don't wait.
They certainly can. Yep. Absolutely. You know, heading into today's session, you know, investors were betting heavily on the Fed cutting rates at the end of this month. Before today opened, you know, CME Group's FedWatch tool showed expectations for some rate cut in July at 100%. You know, last month the Fed said it would act as appropriate to maintain the current U.S. economic expansion, which is now the longest in history, according to the government. But today's jobs report tempered expectations for such aggressive monetary policy. You know, market expectations for a 50 basis point cut fell to just 9%, while expectation for a cut of 25 basis points were still at 91%. Economist Andrew Hunter said the report would seem to make a mockery of market expectations for a quarter of half point cut at the July 31st meeting. The level of job growth is still much stronger, he added, than the levels that have usually prompted the Fed to cut rates in the past.
What was the underemployment number? Do we have that number, Dave?
Yeah, we do. You know, labor participation rate increased slightly to 62.9. But I believe that was 7.2% was the unemployment rate, closer to what we'd call the real unemployment rate. We still think that the 7.2 might be somewhat under-characterized, but certainly that's the more realistic number, not this fanciful, fantasy-laden 3.6, 3.7% to count out, to just not count. People who are so discouraged from not having found a job, many of them, you know, 50, 55 and up range, with graying or gray hair, You know, people say that, hey, you know, you can't discriminate in the basis of age. You want to bet?
Yes.
They may not be supposed to or be able to, but they do. And therefore, you know, the real unemployment rate, at least 7.2%, Melody.
What about the Fed issuing a semiannual report to Congress? When does that happen?
Well, it actually happened today. Oh. The Fed said, you know, it's twice a year report required under the law that created the Fed as amended. The Fed said in this report this morning that, you know, economic growth continued the first half of the year at a solid pace, quote unquote, though it likely weakened in recent months as higher tariffs depressed global trade and business investment weakened, you know, after particularly the tax cuts of 2017 had begun to wear off. You know, the Fed repeated its pledge to, again, act as appropriate to sustain the expansion with possible interest rate cuts in the coming months, but notably said the jobs market had continued to strengthen so far this year. It also described, again, weak inflation as due to transitory influences. That's a term it had taken out at the press conference last month, rather than a lagging economy. The report said further that economic activity increased at a solid pace in the early part of 2019, with sturdy household consumption offsetting weak business investment and growing risks from the tariff-related slowdown.
You know, it's just interesting, though, that they continue to say that the economy is strong and robust and blah, 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 blah. But this morning, I was listening to an interview on CNBC. Is it Santelli? I think his name is. And he's asking this question. If the economy is strong and we're doing fine, why do we want to cut rates? Oh, to keep it going. But that was the same excuse for the tax reform. Oh, we want to keep it going. Without these two things, ladies and gentlemen, that tells us the condition of the country. Because if our country's economy was so great, why mess with it? I mean, you know, why mess with it?
It was just so gratuitous, so unnecessary. They're going to end up regretting it, I'm afraid, when this next recession does hit. And, you know, when the time comes for, you know, what would normally be a decent sized, you know, fiscal stimulus plan, I'm not sure that certainly in the monetary policy sense that there's going to be any room, you know, with rates at, you know, what are they, 2.35% that the Fed's charging its banks.
You know, and I heard the president, no disrespect, but he's talking about all the interest rate that we're paying with the high rates on the debt that we owe. We're paying all this money. Well, why don't you quit the debt? Why don't you shrink the debt? And that would also shrink our payments. isn't that the...
Clearly.
You know? So why don't you do that? You can't. That's why you can't have stimulus. That's why you can't have infrastructure fixing and everything else.
There's nothing like cutting to the chase by eliminating principle.
Let's see. What else? There was a separate section on them on global manufacturing. The Fed said the tariffs imposed by the U.S. and some of its trading partners had combined with the uncertainty around trade policy were likely material in the sharp slowdown in the global manufacturing last year. And again, recent weak inflation, blah, blah. I shouldn't say blah, blah, Dave, because I have a listener that gets upset when I say blah, blah. But it is the same speak that they say all day in, day out. It's the same thing. So my apologies for saying blah, blah to my one listener who doesn't like me to say it. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. You know, blah, 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 with all due respect. You know,
to the Fed, it fits.
Well, yeah, I mean, rather than due to idiosyncratic factors. Judy Shelton, in the interview Melody had just alluded to, she's one of the president's two expected nominees to the Fed, said in this interview on CNBC this morning that Today's strong job report is a good example of fiscal policy working, though she has expressed reservations about the Fed actions. You know, the June non-farm payrolls increase was fantastic, she said, her words. I think it shows that economies really do respond to positive policies that can help create a better environment for businesses to be successful so they can hire people. Now, in remarks after the report came out, the president again blasted the Fed, saying, "We don't have a Fed that knows what they're doing." Trump repeated his claim that the economy would accelerate like a rocket ship with lower rates, and has said in the past that the Dow Jones would be 10,000 points higher with less restrictive monetary policy. Judy Shelton, said that keeping the stock market strong is important for Americans. She talked about, you know, the 50% of Americans who have stock invested through their 401ks and pension plans, and said the Fed shouldn't put the U.S. at a competitive disadvantage with the rest of the world, where zero interest policies, in fact, negative interest rate policies, are becoming more and more commonplace.
But you know what's really sad with a statement like that? What? You know, they talk about, you know, keeping the stock market strong, and they shouldn't put the U.S. at a competitive disadvantage with their. But you know what? We get down to those zero. It's just a matter of time, though, until everything that they're trying to, quote unquote, protect the stock market is just going to crash it.
Yep.
You know, and nobody ever asks them those questions. So what they're doing is just keeping it going. It's frightening, Dave. People are going to lose so much to thinking that these people really know what the heck they're doing. I guess they do in some respect, because they get to keep it going for as long as they have. But they're not telling the people the flip side of that coin.
They keep it going until they don't.
Yep. Yep, but they don't tell them that. This is interesting. I was reading today, Dave, about China saying that all these tariffs have to go in order for a trade deal.
The U.S. has to lift all the tariffs placed on Chinese goods if there is to be a trade deal. That is coming from the Chinese Ministry of Commerce, who said, quote, if the two sides are to reach a deal, all imposed tariffs must be removed. China's attitude on that is clear and consistent. End quote. Two countries reached a truce in their year-long trade war last weekend at the G20 summit in Japan.
So if we're to... we'll finish this up when we get back. We're heading into our first break of the program today. Thank you for joining us today on the day after Freedom Day. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
We will find you at...
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Remember, we got $30 over spot for American Gold Eagles. Premiums, wholesale premiums are beginning to rise on 1 ounce silver Eagles 2019. Secondary market is drying up due to buying. And I went into the U.S. Mint today to see, and you know, it really is amazing that the number of silver Eagles that have been bought this year. And June was a decent month, but still a far cry from the record numbers of millions of them sold on a monthly basis. But June was just a little over a million. But that actually beat out February, March, and April and May. So they were all like 800,000 and so forth. So there was a big pickup. And these, the pickup in 2019 for June of the million plus was just based on everybody buying the random dated one. So it was a good month for the mint and for a summer month, for a beginning of the summer. So we'll see what happens. Heading into the break, we were talking about China saying the tariffs have to go for a trade deal. All the tariffs have to come off Chinese goods if there's going to be a deal. President Trump and Xi agreed to hold off imposing new tariffs and start negotiations again. Those are new tariffs. But Trump also decided to ease his ban on American companies selling products to the Chinese telecom giant Huawei. China said it would continue to buy U.S. agricultural products. Well, you know, these trade discussions change so often, Dave, we're not even sure.
Yeah, a lot of moving targets, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about Vietnam and Argentina.
Vietnam. Well, their prime minister, whose name is Nguyen Jan Phuc, ordered government officials to intensify their crackdown on fraudulently mislabeled products for exports. He also asked them to closely monitor U.S. reactions to the nation's monetary policy to avoid drawing rebukes from the Trump administration. Prime Minister Phuc directed Vietnamese officials to pay close attention to net purchases of foreign currencies as the nation continues to build reserves. Phuc said it's essential to maintain regular communication with U.S. agencies so that they see the issue objectively and cautiously. Vietnam, as we mentioned the other day, is coming under increasing scrutiny from the Trump administration amid a surge in exports to the U.S. and growing evidence of Chinese and other manufacturers diverting their goods there in Vietnam to bypass higher tariffs. Trump described Vietnam last week as the single worst abuser of everybody when asked if he wanted to impose tariffs on the nation.
Well, you have Argentine President Mauricio Macri. He said yesterday that his government is talking with Brazil about a potential U.S. free trade deal. I want to hear fair trade deal, not free trade, fair trade deal.
Yeah, right.
That comes less than a week after landing one with the European Union. Argentine Foreign Minister Jorge I'm just terrible on these foreign names.
Georgie. I like Georgie.
Do you like Georgie? Georgie. Well, that's another area. On George Fari first broke the news Wednesday night, Brazil and Argentina, of course, are the two largest members of the South American trade bloc, and that also includes Paraguay and Uruguay. But the EU deal is the first major trade agreement for the bloc that until recently was known for its protectionist policies and their high tariffs. But according the accord with the EU, the world's second largest consumer market after the U.S., and according to the World Bank data, came after nearly 20 years of off and on negotiations.
Wow.
You don't think we're going to have that with China, do you? 20 years?
Mm.
Maybe.
Mm.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But Macri said that the ratification process for the pact would take 2 years between all the nations involved. And, of course, he argued that it marks a reversal for Argentina after decades of protectionism. But so I think this is something we already know. There's less teens in the labor force. Businesses are finding ways to work around the stagnant teen labor force in a tight jobs market. Well, I have my own opinion on that, but only about 40% of teens aged 16 through 19 were in the labor force last summer, and this is according from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Dave.
Well, that figure supposedly has remained stagnant over the past decade. In 2006, for example, about half of teens were working or looking for work during the summer. Then in the early 2000s, the figure was 20 points higher than it was last summer. Last year, only about one-third of teens held a summer job. Let's see, there's one employer that they talked to that said, you know, he enjoyed offering these first-time workers the opportunity to learn how to, you know, get their chops and how to be a good employee, a team member, et cetera, et cetera. But he, you know, anecdotally says over the past couple of years, you know, they found that 16, 17-year-olds just aren't working like they used to. He's had to open up his business to 14 and 15-year-olds using, you know, programs like Working Papers and working with schools.
I heard a very interesting radio program one time, and that's what they were talking about, actually opening up the work force to, you know, 14 and 15-year-olds, maybe even 13-year-olds, because, you know, particularly in today's world, because the youth are so much more mature than what we were, you know, they're so much more, I don't know, more, you know, their environment is totally different, and working hard, it does give you certain values, and it gives you a little more accountability on the money that you make, and you know, more savings, and you don't buy something until you make it and spend it. So it could be good, and I thought that was an interesting but summer enrollment in educational classes can be one cause for a decline. In July of 1985, which is the earliest year that the BLS collected the data, about 10% of teens were enrolled in classes. In 2018, that number rose to 45%. That's a big jump.
Yeah, I remember when I was 15, I had my first job cutting weeds for the city I lived in. No weed whackers back in those days. They were all hand sickles. In fact, the mayor of that fine city had was our supervisor for the first half of the summer until he got additional, what was it, Comprehensive Employment Training Act, CETA monies to hire a supervisor. That was, now boys and girls who may be listening, your parents will remember with a smile, that first wage at the age of 15, $1.60 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That I'll tell you what, in addition to a little bit of spending money to buy my favorite albums of the day, came some self-esteem, I think, from,
yes,
you know, having earned it myself and not having to, you know, beg mom, dad, or grandparents.
It also gave you a sense of freedom.
Oh, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Because you didn't have to you know, provide and ask. It's always nice to earn and not ask. But I find this interesting about as far as this more teens are enrolled in classes. The only reason we used to go to summer class, or kids used to go to summer class.
I think I know where you're heading.
Is because we failed.
Yeah, you
not
had
we.
To.
I keep saying we. I'm talking we as a general, you know.
Well, your personal experience is friends who failed.
Yes. I mean, anytime a kid went to summer school, it was because he flunked out in something else. So to see that number rise from 10% to 45%, I'm thinking they're not doing that well in class that they have to take summer school. Although I also know your high schools now, it's all about you can take extra classes in the summer so you can graduate in
early.
December instead of, you know, so, you know, but I don't know if that's maybe both of them, but yeah, that concerns me, you know, 10% to 45%, but something else. And now you'd think with the computers and everything that they shouldn't be having these issues, but so it's kind of interesting. They're also looking for, I saw that perhaps athletes, you know, if they have, they might want to perform and to do more a little bit, you know, if they're involved in athlete programs or something like that, that it would take them out of the workforce. So.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be a big thing.
Yeah. What's also interesting is about 40% of teens ages 16 through 19 were in the labor force last summer. This is according. Do they have that split out between girls and boys at all?
I didn't see that.
Okay. All right. Would you like to finish up on?
No.
Dave? Okay.
No, that's good.
All right. Switzerland. You want to talk about Switzerland?
Well, how about it? Switzerland is now ranked as the best place in the world to live and work. They've stolen the crown, earned it presumably, from Singapore, which was at the top for 5 straight years. High living standards and competitive salaries have seen the Swiss nation become a regular fixture among the world's most livable cities. But at a time of growing geopolitical uncertainty, Switzerland's famed political and economic stability has helped it climb the ranks of HSBC Expat's annual survey to score the top spot for the first time. Switzerland jumped up the rankings from 8th place to 1st after 80% or more of people had relocated there from overseas, so they were happy with its economic and political climate. About 82% of people who moved to Switzerland for work also said they enjoyed an improved standard of living compared to their home country.
Well, you know, about 7 in 10 of those who have moved to Switzerland now enjoy higher levels of disposable income. Are they socialists?
I don't believe so.
No? Disposable income, with their average salary being $111,000, well above the global average of $75,000. Meanwhile, 70% said their surroundings were cleaner, 42% felt physically healthier. This year's report, which is based on responses from more than 18,000 expats in 163 markets, marks the first time in 5 years that Singapore was not ranked in first place. So the top 10 of HSBC's best places to live and work was rounded out in order by Canada, Spain, New Zealand, Australia, Turkey, Germany, United Arab Emirates, and Vietnam. You know, it really is interesting. I mean, it's because the United States isn't there.
I know. Yeah, I didn't have time to look at that survey to see where the U.S. Ranked. You know, I'm sure, you know, if you added, you know, cities, that there would have been numerous U.S. cities that would have competed with that top 10, the nation states that were listed in this annual survey.
And they didn't say where the 18,000 expats were. It wasn't just from one area. I mean, it was from all countries, expats in all countries.
I suspect they were from the sampling of different countries. Wow. Anyway, so that's that. Now we know. Well, hey, Russia's S-500 missile system apparently coming sooner than advertised, Melody.
Well, you know, the Russian CEO who oversees the Kremlin's military-industrial complex said that the nation's S-500 surface-to-air missile system is going to enter service very soon. Rostec CEO said earlier this week that the S-500, an upgraded version of the S-400 missile system, was in production, and of course it's going to soon join the Kremlin's arsenal after testing. Earlier in the week, Russian Deputy Prime Minister Yuri Borisov said that the S-500 would be delivered to troops earlier than initially planned. He cited a series of successful tests as a reason for updating this. And Russia quietly conducted the world's longest surface-to-air missile test with the S-500 in May of last year that reportedly struck a target 299 miles away, which the U.S. assessed as 50 miles further than any known test.
Yeah, so certainly to the extent that they are going to place this, you know, in the western part of the Russian Federation, you know, that could be perceived as a fairly destabilizing move, particularly with some of its former former Soviet republics. Meanwhile, this is happening. 13 countries have expressed interest in buying Russia's S-400. That's a move that could trigger potential U.S. sanctions under a 2017 act. In September, the U.S. slapped sanctions on China for buying fighter jets and missiles from Russia, you know, although the U.S. could grant waivers to these sanctions should it choose. The S-400 made its debut in 2007. Now, compared with U.S. missile systems, the Russia-made S-400 is believed to be capable of engaging a wide array of targets at longer ranges and against multiple threats all at the same time.
British Marines storm an Iranian ship, Dave.
Jeez, how bad.
I know. In Gibraltar, they stormed an Iranian ship believed to have been carrying oil to Syria. Of course, this is in violation of the European Union sanctions on Syria. Gibraltar port and law enforcement agencies, aided by the British Marines, detained the Grace One supertanker early Thursday morning. Spain's acting foreign minister, Joseph Borrell, said that the U.S. had asked the U.K. to intercept the ship. We have reason to believe that they were carrying this crude oil to Syria, and we'll finish this up when we get back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. It's a little bit of a laid-back program today. It's Friday after the holiday, and yes, it was very warm on the eastern shore of Maryland yesterday, as I think in most places, at least on the East Coast, and takes a little bit out of you, but so it's a little bit of laid back, light volumes everywhere. We sold some deals here at Discount Gold and Silver, and that's why I always work. So make sure you support us. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Dave, would you like to finish up on the anything else you'd like to say about the British Marines storming the Iranian ship with the rest of the U.S.?
You know, it just the action has sparked like a war of words, all this posturing. A spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry said that, you know, the British ambassador to Tehran had been summoned over the illegal seizure of the oil tanker. Another official condemned the operation, calling it piracy. That official said the UK does not have the right to implement its or the EU's unilateral sanctions against other nations in an extraterritorial manner. Gosh, these words. We have to remember, I mean, you know, the good news is, you know, these big words do come in handy when you're playing Scrabble. But gosh, beyond that, blah, blah, blah just seems to.
You know what I find interesting about it is what other country? I'm surprised they didn't bring Venezuela in here somewhere. And you know,
hey, who knows? You know, these actions make for strange bedfellows, just like, you know, all the politics does. So God knows, you know, who's aiding whom these days.
And you know, the Iranian president Hassan Rouhani, he said, "Hey, you know, we're going to enrich uranium in any amount that we want." So there. He said that on Sunday. He says the latest escalation of dramatic confrontation, of course, between Tehran and the U.S. Comes just days after Iran said it had blown past the stockpile limits, the uranium. The agreement with six world powers that was meant to scale back its nuclear ability for a decade in exchange for an end in economic sanctions. And Iran's oil exports, its main source of income, fell to 300,000 barrels per day when the U.S. pulled out of the nuclear deal in April 2018, and the Iran shipped more than 2.5 million barrels of oil per day. Big drop.
Yeah, you know, the 2015 deal caps enrichment at just under 3.7%. That's a level referred to as low enriched uranium, which can be used for nuclear power generation, but not nuclear weapons grade fuel. James Corbett talked to Melody about this last Friday. You know, the agreement also says that Iran can never have more than 660 pounds of this low level fuel on hand. Now, You know, Foreign Policy reported that many experts believe it would take the country about a year to create enough weapons-grade uranium for a nuclear bomb. So the low level can be converted, just takes longer than highly enriched uranium. Now, again, Iran claims it does not want to build any nuclear bombs. And certainly any efforts to make highly enriched uranium would endanger what little is left of the 2015 deal. But whatever the case, Rouhani has signaled that he wants other European countries that are privy to the accord and still in it to step in and help relieve the sanctions, which is to say bypass them, so Iran can abide by the deal. Rouhani says, our advice to Europe and the U.S. is to go back to logic and to the negotiating table. Not sure. Strong words from someone with little leverage, Melody.
Tell us about, you know, this is interesting because the UN is warning of possible war crimes. Why don't you tell us about that, Dave?
Well, just briefly here, if you're referring to Myanmar, recent fighting there between Myanmar's army and insurgents in that country has had a devastating impact on civilians. We reported on this a couple of weeks ago on the program. Yang He Lee told the UN Human Rights Council that Myanmar's military and the Arakan Army, that's an armed guerrilla group that's been fighting for more autonomy for that state's ethnic Buddhists, may be guilty of violating international humanitarian law. Lee told the council many acts of the military and the Arakan army violate that law and may amount to war crimes as well as violating human rights. Now, you want me to continue or you want to?
Yes, no, go ahead.
Well, the Arakan army, which has launched several deadly attacks on government soldiers this year, has allegedly also abducted civilians, including a larger group of construction workers in the neighboring Chin state. You know, it's apparently arresting, interrogating, and, quote, disappearing civilians believed to have links to the Arakan army, noting that a lot of those detainees have died in country, died in custody, I beg your pardon. You know, there's more than 700,000 Rohingyas, most of whom are Muslim. They fled to Bangladesh following, military crackdown just 2 years ago. That crackdown included mass killings, gang rapes, described by some UN officials and human rights groups as a possible genocide. It's an ugly situation, place that... the world at large seems to, if not turn the other cheek, at least show many signs of reticence as these killings continue.
Well, you know, I want to get to you wrote on the blog today about 40% of Americans say they struggle to pay their bills. We're going to talk a little bit about, we do have a Facebook page, and you can go to @DGSCoins. @DGSCoins, and we'll talk about this on Monday. It's a little fun, and because let's see if we can agree, if everyone, I know we will, but all of you listening out there, to see you're just gonna have to tune in on Monday when we talk about Mount Rushmore. So let's talk about the 40% of Americans who say they struggle to pay their bills. The latest blog that's out as we speak, and you can go to our website, dgscoins.com, and sign up for the newsletter and the blog, and that a large portion of Americans are struggling. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, as we now know, the economic expansion this week, Melody, became the longest in U.S. history, surpassed the 1990s boom, which lasted exactly a decade. The paper market, the stock, equities are at record levels. Dow Jones closing at a new high on Wednesday. but this expansion has been weaker and its benefits have been distributed far more unevenly than in previous growth cycles. And it's left many, many Americans in a vulnerable position. Matthew Misch of the bank UBS said this is a two-tier recovery. About 60% of Americans have benefited financially, he said, while 40% have not. The 40%, which Misch calls the lower tier, have seen few or certainly volatile wage growth, rising expenses for housing, healthcare, education, and increased levels of personal debt, in some cases explosive. And they tend not to own homes or many stocks.
Well, your article points out that in discussions with 30 Americans unable to who can't pay their bills, a pattern is emerging. Most are able to eke out by until they face an unexpected crisis, and we talk about this all the time. There's no one saving anything. If they had a $1,000 crisis, they couldn't pay for it. But a bigger crisis, like maybe a job loss or medical, car troubles, storm damages.
Yeah, the extra expense causes them to get behind in their bills, as you just said. The problem is they never fully rebound. Economists fear that, such shaky financial scenarios put many Americans at risk if there's even a mild setback in the economy, potentially setting up the next recession to be a lot worse than anything in recent history, including the Great Recession. Mary McKiernan, vice president of the Urban Institute, said, so many Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, and we're headed toward a political crisis, not only an economic one. So, the average American, I like to say the everyday American household, is yet to recover fully from the 2008 financial crisis. That's a fact that the Federal Reserve studied and reported on just last year.
And again, here we're seeing this divide. It seems like everything is a divide anymore. It's either... And so that has left half the country with a small cushion to handle surprise expenses or the next downturn.
In fact, Melody, the bottom half has less wealth today after adjusting for inflation than it did in 1989. That's, again, according to the Fed, through data it compiled through the end of the first quarter this year. Now, while wage growth has accelerated in recent months, especially for the lowest paid workers, families who've struggled for, years have a long way to go to return to solid footing. Half of U.S. jobs pay less than $18.58 an hour, and more than a third pay less than $15 an hour, which just makes it difficult to save or invest for a better future, whether, it's a home, education, retirement, whatever. Ray Bisharo, he's an economist with St. Louis Fed, said just because folks on Wall Street think things are fine doesn't mean most Americans feel like things are fine. When every day is a rainy day for millions of families, things are not fine. To get by, guess what? Americans have borrowed heavily in recent years. Total U.S. household debt is now almost $14 trillion. Surpassing, I'm not sure that's a correct figure. I think it's higher, surpassing the 2000 peak in dollar terms. It's according to the New York Fed. But, the surge in debt this time around is for cars and college, not mortgages. Americans now owe more than $1.6 trillion in student loans and almost $1.2 trillion in debt for auto loans.
You have the older and wealthier Americans typically taking on debt to buy homes or make investments that are likely to make them richer in the years to come, or so they think.
And most in this category have recovered the wealth they lost in the Great Recession. Home prices and stocks have, gone up pretty substantially.
And what have they learned?
Well, that's the other question. Let's call it an inverse relationship. Contrast that, data from, again, the Fed and credit score company Equifax showing that families of color, Americans born after 1970, and households earning less than $60,000 are least likely to have recovered the wealth they lost in the crisis. They tend to carry much heavier debt loads. You know, they often take out loans for college, which they can't get rid of in bankruptcy, or loans to pay bills, which can put them even further behind.
But as usual, isn't the prevailing view among Wall Street investors in Washington, policymakers, don't worry, be happy?
Ah, yes, I know, Hakuna Matata. You know, indeed, it is. I mean, that's supposedly for one reason, because student loans are backed by the government, and delinquency rates for other kinds of debt are relatively low, meaning most people can make their monthly payments. You know, Mark Zandi, who's chief economist at Moody Analytics, says credit quality is as good as I've ever seen it. You know, there's nothing that suggests inordinate stress on low-income households, certainly nothing compared to times past. You know, I like Mark Zandi as a rule, but what is he thinking? What is he reading? What is he smoking?
I need to keep my job, is what he's thinking.
When he says that. You know, St. Louis Fed pointed out that credit card and auto loan delinquencies have risen this year. That's the opposite of what Wall Street expects in good economic times. Bottom line, 4 in 10 Americans say they still struggle to pay their bills despite the strong economy. And that, by the way, has shown little to no improvement over the last 5 years.
And of course, looking at how households are doing by class, race, or age reveals a concerning picture for the coming months and years, especially when the next recession hits, which is right around the corner, or we're already in it. 800-375-4188. Don't wait, ladies and gentlemen, give us a call. Or maybe you might just have to wait till Monday, but we'll be back then. Please stay tuned and be safe. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Melody.
Have a great weekend. Until then, be safe. Good night.
Bye.